We're on page 167, and this is the Navagrahana Puja. So this is the worship of the nine planets. Om, crimson red like a hibiscus flower, the great light shines onto the earth, removing all the darkness and eradicating sin. We bow down with devotion to that shining light. Om, we bow to the sun, the light of wisdom, the dispeller of ignorance. Creamy white like a container of curds and most pleasing, the moon is born from the churning of the milk ocean. We bow down to the effulgent emblem of devotion, which is an ornament on the crown of Lord Shiva. Om, we bow to the moon, the emblem of devotion. Supporting the womb of all existence, Mars shines forth with the radiance of beauty enhanced by love. The sun, wielding energy in his hand, we bow down to Mars, bearer of welfare. Om, we bow down to Mars, bearer of welfare. Whose beloved body is dark like darkness, whose image is like the form of intelligence, whose qualities are most beautiful to that Mercury, emblem of intelligence. We bow down in devotion. Om, we bow down to Mercury, the emblem of intelligence. The guru of the gods, and also the rishis, who is like the highest wealth, who is the most intelligent of all beings, to that Jupiter, guru of the gods, we bow down in devotion. Om, we bow down to the guru of the gods. Like sandal and jasmine that have been crushed, the foremost guru of the forces of duality, who expounds all the scriptures to that descendant of Bhrigu, we bow down in devotion. Om, we bow down to Venus, the emblem of love and attachment. Looking like a blue cloud, the son of the sun, he is foremost of those who control. He can even put his shadow over the glorious sun to that Saturn, emblem of control. We bow down in devotion. Om, we bow down to Saturn, the emblem of control. The great warrior divides even the sun and moon in half. He is born from the womb of Simhika, and we bow down in devotion to the North Node who commands direction. Om, we bow down to the North Node who commands direction. Red like a plush flower, who makes the starry-eyed constellation to set. He is terrible and awesome to see, and we bow down in devotion to the South Node, who presents obstacles. Om, we bow down to the South Node, who presents obstacles. Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva always contemplate the sun, moon, earth, Mercury, Jupiter, Venus, Saturn, the North and South Nodes. May all the constellations remain in peace. Om, we bow to the nine planets. So this is our Navagraha Puja, and I'd like to talk for a little bit about Jyotish astrology, because all of the planets have both positive and negative influences. So if you take a piece of paper, if you have one, and let's just talk a little bit about their positive influences and some of the negative ones. And let's just write down some key words. Let's begin with Surya, the sun. The sun is the light of wisdom. It's the warmth of devotion. He presides over meditation, focus, illumination, clarity, determination. Soma, the moon, is the emblem of devotion. He inspires selfless love, pure devotion, unattached service. Mangal is Mars. His name itself means welfare. He has a dominant masculine attribute. It presides over determination, sankalpa, strength, nobility, courageous fortitude. Budh is Mercury. He presides over communication, intellect, artistic expression, especially the abilities to communicate the muses, art, philosophy, music.
So how do we differ from Sarasvati?
She is not a planet. Many of the deities have overlapping areas of responsibility.
She's like the CEO.
That's a fine analogy. Brihaspati is Jupiter. He presides over the intellect, over learning, over teaching. He is the guru. And he presides over the guru-disciple relationship, turning disciples into gurus. Shukra is Venus. He presides over love, attachment, beauty, poetry, relationships, sensuality. Shani is Saturn. And Saturn presides over discipline. Often Saturn is regarded as malefic because he restricts. And yet, he's also auspicious because he restricts our activity to the furtherance of our goals. So it's not only negative restriction, but all restriction. And without some kind of restriction, there's nothing to preclude us from moving off on any tangent and therefore digging many shallow wells. So Shani is very important, especially to spiritual seekers, because he keeps us focused in the sankalpa.
Saturn is generally not bad.
No.
Period at all.
No. Saturn should be a very productive period.
But it could be painful because he's a disciplinarian.
He gives discipline, so it could be painful, but it certainly will be productive and conducive to growth. Rahu is the north node, and he commands direction. Usually, he may be likened to chumba, self-conceit, or madhu, too much. If he errs in any direction, it will be in the direction of excess. But he gives us self-respect. He gives us courage to march off and face new circumstances. He gives us the strength and the poise with which to confront the circumstances of life. And Ketu goes to the south. He represents too little. Nishumba, self-deprecation. The obstacles which we present ourselves, I can't do it, I shouldn't do it, I shoulda, woulda, coulda. If he errs in any direction, it will be in paucity or miserliness, whereas Rahu will bring us to too much, Ketu will bring us to too little. Now, we strive to put all of these planets into a balance in our every activity. And that's why it's really important to get into harmony with our Jyotish. These are all the forces that bring us to success, the light of wisdom, the warmth of devotion, the focus of sankalpa, the strength to pursue that sankalpa, the capacity to communicate, the knowledge which brings us into the harmony of efficiency in the actions that we're trying to perform, the discipline by which we achieve success, the beauty and attachment, the passion with which we pursue our goal. And moving into the balance between too much and too little, between self-conceit and self-deprecation, putting all of these forces of the stars and planets into harmony and balance in our every action. This is what the Navagraha Puja is about. The planets, of course, are inside. If I am the Purusha, then the entire creation is located inside me. Then each of the planets is part of my solar system. And in order to achieve efficiency in what I'm striving to accomplish, I want to put all the planets into that harmony, into that balance. Now, of course, there are as many ways of looking at astrology as there are astrologers. However, this interpretation is in keeping with Samudrik astrology, Samudrik Jyotish, which is the system in which I was raised. Not necessarily predictive astrology, but the astrology of personality and personal transformation. When we study, remember our six subjects of Sanskrit studies, grammar, pronunciation, literature and history, philosophy, astrology, and the systems of worship. We need to know enough astrology to know what type of puja to perform at what time. And we need to know what type of personality do I have and what sadhana will be best for me. And if we can extend that to our family, what type of personality do our family members have? Which planets are out of alignment in their solar systems? Then we become a more effective guide. This is another appendage to astrology. How do you use the astrology to put your universe into balance?
When you said to figure out what puja to do, is that to figure out what puja to do to have a certain effect on your little universe, or on what?
Both on the microcosm and in the macrocosm. Today, on such and such a date, we will perform the Navaratri celebration. Within that, we need to calculate when is the Sandhi Puja, when is the last 24 minutes of Ashtami, and the first 24 minutes of Navami, and the 48 minutes. We need to be able to make those calculations. That's on the macrocosm. How do we fit into the cosmic harmony according to the position of the stars in the cosmos? And on the microcosm, which ones of my planets are out of orbit and sending me into outer space? And how do I put them back into harmony and send me into inner space?
How do you know which ones are out of orbit?
Well, you can look at your astrology. After you look at your astrology, I don't advise dumping kilos of dal into the river or wearing rings or stones. Remember,
you like to eat sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's true, but I would rather feed them my karma. Remember, the Asuras get their siddhis from wearing stones and amulets. The Devas get their siddhis from drinking somras. And the Rishis get their siddhis from performing tapasya. What kind of siddhi are we seeking to attain? So if people are prescribing for us stones or amulets or rings, this is going to cure the default in your personality. This is going to cure the defects of your personality or your relationship to the universe. Then we're placing our attention and our dependency upon an external object rather than performing the tapasya to bring our planets into alignment inside. So we will possibly attain the siddhi, the attainment of the Asuras. Because our focus is to the outside, towards the ring, towards the stone, towards the necklace, our focus is not inside. So we're drawn away from the inner into the outer. Asuras are the forces of external expression or individuality. And the devas, the shining ones, the gods, are the forces which impel us towards that inner unity, inner harmony. So we're putting our focus and our attention, our awareness, our strength into the external.
That's also like when people go to have pujas done for them, right?
As compared with doing it for themselves.
How did that happen that people would have pujas done?
That's a very good question. And historically what happened was, in the Vedic period and in the Upanishadic period, Upa-asana, sitting near, all the disciples came to the guru and said, how do we remember? And the guru said, do the puja. Now, as time passed, the kings became busy with their kingdoms, and the vaishyas, the business people, became busy with their businesses. The shudras were busy with their work, and they said, we neither have the knowledge, nor the time, nor the experience in order to do this. The Brahmins were the teachers of how to do it yourself. They said to the Brahmins, could you just do it for us? We'll pay you. You know how to do it. You have the capacity to do it. You have the skill to do it. You have the practice to do it. This is your life. This is your life's work. Here, we have money. We'll make dakshina. You do it for us. I don't have time and I don't have the mind to put all that stuff in my head. I've got a very important engagement today and I can't sit down because the sun is in a certain astrological configuration. The heavens are perfectly arranged. I can't leave my business or my family in order to perform this puja according to the astrology. I'm just too busy. You do it for us. And that's how it happened. And the consequence of that is when the students stopped asking questions, then the teachers stopped preparing for class. And over time, the knowledge was lost.
But then didn't it become, you know, only Brahmins could do the pujas, or only...
Well, after some time, they said, okay, we're Brahmins and the Brahmins should do the pujas and you don't even have to learn it. And the reason they said that was because they never bothered to learn it themselves. You see the pujas that the Brahmins performed on our behalf, in many places, it was a shame. It was totally a shame. We paid 501 rupees for a Vedic part in Badrinath, and the man came and said, Shanti, Shanti, Shanti! Next. And it is sheer profiteering. It is sheer profiteering, and they're capitalizing on the gullibility of devotees who came all the way up to the top of the Himalayas to read the Vedas or have the Vedas read for them or to be instructed in how to have a religious experience, and they were sheared like sheep. You can't even get close to the deity or make an offering to the deity without buying a ticket. So we bought the ticket. The man says, Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. And that was our Vedic part. And while we were sitting there, they were throwing the prasad. It was quite a travesty of religious experience. I venture to say, and it's my position, I've been trying to inspire others to believe it, I believe that if pilgrims go with so much faith, if they were given the respect and the teaching and a real religious experience, they would generously donate and support much more than when we walk up to see the deity and they say, 10 rupees, 10 rupees. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. But there aren't too many people who want to do much about that or to change it. So it'll be up to us to make the change for them. by living it ourselves.
Yeah.
That's why this Navagraha Puja, we come back to putting our universe in order. Putting all the stars and all the influences and all the planets, all the planetary forces that are inspiring us and impelling us in one direction or another. Yes, please.
So, could we just chant the Chandi though instead of, say, performing the Navagraha Homa or something? Correct?
We can, or we can do both. Before we chant the Chandi, we want to do the Cosmic Puja. While we're doing the Cosmic Puja, one of the functions inside the Cosmic Puja is to put the entire universe into harmony, inside and outside, for ourselves and for others. And if we look at the meanings of these planets and how they really affect our lives, we can tell very readily when we're out of harmony and when we're out of balance. Yes, please.
I'm not clear about how they affect our lives, how being born at a particular time, for instance, what do the planets do to us?
Did you ever notice scientifically the phases of the moon and their effects on the tides? The greater is the orb of the moon, the greater the attraction of the water on the Earth. Is that true? There's a physical relationship between the phases of the moon and the phases of the water. And that goes not just for the waters in the ocean, but even all the liquids in our bodies. And you can feel on Amavasya, on the no moon, on the night of the no moon, we have a different physiology than on the night of the full moon. You can feel that. You can demonstrably verify that. These are scientific facts. Each of these planets pulls on us, has an attractive capacity, a magnetic force that pulls us in a certain direction at a certain time. And that's how the relationship of the planets to the individual works and to the cosmos.
So it would bring out these qualities?
Yes, it will, and their antithesis. The negative aspects of each of these qualities as well as the positive.
What will?
The positions of the planets.
Doesn't astrology depend on knowing the exact moment of birth? Like, you mean even minutes?
No, that is only predictive astrology. That's for people who come and say, "Will I win the lottery? Read my palm. What's going to happen to me?" However, look inside at your universe. Now, if you're interested in looking at a chart, yes, it would behoove you to have the right information. But if you're interested in looking at the solar system as it exists inside, how focused am I in meditation? How much devotion can I express as I perform my spiritual discipline? How am I pulled this way or that way by my attachments? Or can I attach myself to the purity of my guru's example?
So are we talking now that throughout the year we're being pulled in different ways, or does this all have to do with when we were born and then it's fixed?
No, we're talking about throughout every day pulled in different directions. Because of the positions of the planets universally and individually. I'm constantly seeking a harmony or an alignment of my planets. That doesn't mean I get up every morning and look in the newspaper and see, you know, my what's your sign?
But you don't look at your chart either, right?
No. I look at the positions of my planets. I look at my stars. Am I in harmony?
Does that mean you sit and contemplate that?
When I do this puja, yes, I feel the light of wisdom and the warmth of devotion rising up and illuminating. I call upon the moon to fill me with this devotion so that I can fulfill my objective. I call upon Mars to find my goal and to really give me the strength to push me in the direction of my sankalpa. I call upon Mercury to allow me to communicate, to express. I'm a poet, so I like to write. I try to translate this stuff. I call upon Mercury to help me express what is the essence of this Vedic life. What is the Sanskrit philosophy that we're trying to communicate? I call upon Venus to allow me to have the attachment to purity and clarity and to express beauty and love without selfishness.
It's like a tuna.
Yeah.
You're tuning
each of the planets. I'm tuning my universe to look the way I want it to look. And I believe that's the efficacy of performing Navagraha Puja. Now, it works in other ways, too. I have yet to meet an astrologer whose livelihood comes from astrology who doesn't open up a chart and say, "Oh, my." They will all find some reason why you're not in harmony. And usually their suggestion is to do something outside to put yourself in harmony, which often inures to a donation to the astrologer. That's the business of astrology. The utility of astrology is something different from the business of astrology. Because when we can actually put our universe into balance, we feel at one with the universe. It's another tool. And that's why we perform the Navagraha Puja.
How and why can you predict as a result of astrology?
Why can you predict? Well, I don't. I don't predict, I don't use astrology as a tool of prediction. Now, there are predictive astrologers. But I suggest, at least to me, most of them use the circumstances and the environment to coincide with the positions of the planets. So their knowledge of an individual. For example, if I look at someone's chart or at their hand, I could tell basic tendencies, basic directions of that individual, basic personality traits. What is the basic inclination of that individual? What are their strengths and where are they a little bit lax? Now, if you put that into the form of a question, which includes the circumstances of that individual's life, you could very probably, to a certain degree of accuracy, intuit what will be the probable outcome of their actions. So for me, it's very important. If I say to you, you should perform yoga, hatha yoga exercises, you would say, well, why should I do that? He doesn't do it himself. However, if I look at your chart and say, gee, you know, your stars here are out of alignment. The Sunny is coming to attack you from this angle, and Mars is standing there with his sword and his spear ready to poke you. If you perform yoga, then you might be able to avert that. Then you have more of an interest and more of a motivation for performing whatever discipline it is to free you.
Well, maybe this is a question for Ma, but Ma was talking about how the family would look at the year that's coming up, and that would be valuable in terms of knowing things and adjusting to them, I guess. Or.
Yes, there are prevailing attitudes, both in the social dharma and in the individual dharma. And that would change. So if I know what the prevailing attitudes are, then it would be to my benefit. I could use it to my benefit.
Attitudes?
Yes.
Does that mean the influences of the planets?
Right. Mm-hmm. the influence of the planets creates a prevailing attitude.
So there'll be tendencies at that time. For
That's right.
Does this mean there's going to be times during the year that you're not going to, like, say, be able to meditate very well because of the influence of the planets? I mean, just
it will be a greater struggle,
yeah.
Certainly. And that's when it's the most beneficial. The greater our struggle is, the greater the benefit. Because when we overcome the struggle, then we come through the other side, and it becomes easier and easier, and we become more and more focused. Yes, it will change, also according to the attitudes or the vibrations of what's going on in the cosmos.
It must say with astrologer, and he says you have a, say you have a Shani problem, or you have a Venus problem, you should chant the Venus mantra, but I went and chanted the Chandi instead, or say like the Lakshmi Puja, instead of doing the mantra for the planet, is there some vibration that would appease the planet if I were to do that particular planet one as well?
Yes, there is. But also it says in chapter 12 of the Chandi, all the negative influences of the planets are completely removed through the recitation of the Chandi. So that if you did the Chandi recitation and you recited the mantra of that planet, or you did the entire Navagraha Puja and chanted the Chandi, you'd find even greater impetus to harmony.
But you can't appease the planets if you go and chant, say, a Lakshmi Puja or a thousand names of Lakshmi.
Sure, every name of God is beneficial. However, if there are certain areas of your life that need more amplification or more assistance, then why not use those tools as well? Mother took down my shingle as an astrologer some years ago, and she put me out of business, and I was very happy for that. But if you use it in a certain perspective, of course, I use it for a spiritual purpose. I don't use it for a livelihood, and I don't like to do predictive astrology. I enjoy to do an understanding of what the basic direction, the basic inclination of an individual is, and of a family. And, you know, I've done it for businesses as well, and for boards of directors. It's a very interesting field, because if you see that certain members of a board of directors have personality conflicts, then there'll be a lack of trust between them, a lack of communication. They're not all working for the same goal. So I've had some corporate executives ask us, what do you think of this prospective employee? How do they fit? How do they merge with the rest of us? Which is a very interesting field, too. But that's a different kind of astrology than, am I going to win the lottery? Or how many babies am I going to have? How big will they grow? Yes, please.
So if you're born at a particular time.
Yes.
The planets influence you. You mean you have obviously tendencies from samskara from the past.
Yes.
But that's your personality, and your personality is further influenced by that particular, or is
by the planets.
It's a result of this previous samskaras that you were born
at that time. Right. And so then your samskaras and the time of birth and place of birth and the overall universe that you carry around with you is a consequence of your samskaras. That creates the astrological configuration under which you're born. And when that creates the dominant personality traits that you have. Now, as you develop in this lifetime, you work harder and harder or pay more attention to putting your universe in order, in balance. And as you become more and more balanced, you can counteract the malevolent influences of the planets and put them into a harmony, into a greater harmony.
Why is that one specific point of time so important when you're born? That's what it's all centered around.
It is not all centered around that, no. We just discussed that when the moon grows, the waves get higher. And so it's not only centered around that specific time that you're born, although that is a very important time because that's what you started with. That time of conception is what we came into this universe with.
And why is that so important?
Because that's the foundation from which we're growing. That's like the culmination of all the past samskaras up to the point of manifestation.
Where in the body would those plants be located? Did each have a specific correlation, like chakra?
No, some people try to relate them to the chakras, but they're not really related to the chakras. At least I'd never heard of a human anatomic or anatomical, or whatever you call it. When you divide up the anatomy of a human being or do a dissection, you would never find, well, there's Venus over there. And, you know, it's not a physical location. We're talking about a spiritual expression. If you want to go ahead and put them in your chakras.
But hand them on the hand.
In your hand, the signs of the planets are there in your hand. And so when you read the palmistry, you can see the planets in the hands. You can see them in the chart. You can see them in the personality. But I don't think you would see them in a particular place of body.
Just wondering, then, just like the planets and all of their interactions constantly changing. It's like the physics of karma working out, just like there are specific laws of mathematics and physics that govern billiard balls and everything else. These are like the physics that govern how all these karmas interact with each other.
Yes, that's very true, and that's an excellent point there, that there are certain physics that keep the attraction of the planets, to keep the orbits constant in the solar system. And when one planet moves out a little bit, another planet moves in a little bit to compensate, or in some way, they are in relationship to each other. And we find the same thing happening within the spiritual aspects of our own development.
They are your relative.
They are all your relatives? They're relative.
What's wrong with you? Well, the manifestation of our physical body, our intellect, and our mind, and everything. And on the earth, at the time we were born, we carry with us after we die. Now, we're effectively planets after we leave this spirit. What is that? We've expressed it by coming in with these certain traits. We carry those traits to the next place. Then we're born at a time for those traits to be expressed.
No, not necessarily. Hopefully, during our lifetime, we will perform sufficient karmas to change the organization of our stars. I see the lines of my hand changing regularly.
Yeah.
As I evolve.
So the next time when we go out with what we've learned and evolved to, then that will be the expression.
That's right.
We'll wait for that time to come before we're manifest, or it just happens.
It just happens. That's the natural order of things.
Yeah.
Certain masters that try to pick certain auspicious dates sometimes when they go into Mahasabha or something like that. So, what is the reason for that? Because I hear stories from that from time to time.
It's true. In the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 8, if you leave your body during the dark of the 6 months when the sun is in the southern hemisphere, then you go to one place, whereas if you leave your body during the 6 months when it's in the northern hemisphere, you go to another place. If you leave your body during the dark fortnight of the month, you go to one place or space. If you leave your body during the bright fortnight, you go to another space. If you leave your body on certain auspicious days, you go to one space. If you leave your body during certain inauspicious days, you go to another space. So these are all defined in scripture. And if you can direct your energies to leave at the time that you choose, Bhishma was given Ichamrityu. He could leave when he wanted to. The day he was shot, filled with arrows, was the day that the sun moved into the southern hemisphere. So he said, stop the war. Don't continue the battle until I leave. Everybody come here every day until I decide that it's time to go. And I'm going to conduct discourse from this bed of arrows. We'll have satsang all day long. So, of course, the 6 months when the sun was just traversing to its southernmost part and then returning back to the equator, those 6 months, Bhishma gave the discourse of the Mahabharata, which told about all the laws and rules and customs and traditions. It was filled with the Bhishma Parva of the Mahabharata. Very exciting discourses he conducted. The day he completed the discourse was the day the sun came back to the equator, and the next moment it moved into the northern hemisphere. He said, okay, I'm gone. And he left his body at that time. Then they started the war again.
The planets interacting is sort of like the perfect workings of karma, that for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. That I can understand and accept, but then there are so many stories I've heard you tell, some from the scriptures, where, say, a devotee dies or is about to die or is in the process of dying, and Yama is coming and he's to go. But then, because of his devotion, his guru intercedes or God intercedes.
Certainly.
So, can you address how that aspect of race transcends what would otherwise be your home?
Excellent question. Of course, we call grace kripa, do and get. So now here is someone who is so submerged in devotion, so absorbed in devotion, that they move beyond recognition of the physical. They are so focused in their devotion that they have no recognition of the physical, and the god of death comes to take them. And in the story, of course, of Markandeya, who grabbed onto the Shiva lingam and said, you can't take me away from Shiva. And Yama, the god of death, said, no, it's your time to go, and it's my duty to take you. And Markandeya said, I'm not leaving Shiva. And Yam pulled and pulled and pulled, and finally Shiva came and said, leave me alone. And Yam said, it's my duty, it's the laws of nature, this is the job that you have given to me to take them at the appointed time. I have to fulfill my obligation. And Shiva said, I have taken the vow that I am going to fulfill the pure desire of a pure devotee. And now my vow is more important than your vow. So I'm forgiving you for your negligence of duty, but don't take my devotee. But that was how the situation was resolved. And Shiva prevailed and said, you'll break the laws of nature. Go ahead.
Is it more desirable to stay in a body? As long as you can, we've heard that. The more life you can have, the better.
Actually, it depends on your perspective. The story that comes to mind immediately is the story of the Shadgarbha, it's called. The story of the Vashus. There were the Shadgarbha. The 8 Vashus were wandering about, and they saw Vashishtha's cow. And they thought, what a beautiful cow. That's the Kamadhenu. Anybody who gets to drink from the milk of that cow gets the fulfillment of every desire that they want. And the oldest brother said, let's take the cow. Vasishtha came home and said, Nandi, where are you? And Nandi was nowhere to be seen. So he sat down in meditation and said, where is my Nandi? And he looked deeply inside. He saw those 8 Washus stole his cow. He got mad. He said, I curse you. Go down to earth and live like human beings. Now, when the 8 Washus heard that they were cursed, they ran to Vasishtha. They fell at her feet. They said, Vasishtha Muni, our oldest brother, it was his idea. It was his order. And you're cursing all of us. And we were just obeying our older brother. And it wasn't our fault. And he said, okay, the 7 of you will be freed from the curse very quickly, but the 8th one is going to be here for a long, long time. Now remember, at that time, of course, Ganga had an affair with Mahabisha. And Brahma got mad and said, this isn't the kind of stuff I want going on in heaven. You both go down to earth and work out this relationship stuff. Get it out of your system. So Ganga was coming down to earth, and the 8 Washus were going down to earth, and they met along the way down to earth. And Ganga said, where are you guys going? And he said, oh God, we're going to earth. Vasishtha cursed us that we would be born as human beings. Ad nauseum. And they said, Ganga, where are you going? And she said, oh, Brahma got mad. I made eyes at Mahabisha, and he cursed me to go down to earth, and I have to go get this relationship stuff out of my system. And the 8 Washus said, hey, Ganga, we've got a proposition for you. Would you become our mother? I mean, we've got to take birth. You got to go down there and have a relationship. Maybe we should put it all together. Now, we've got a deal for you. We request, 7 of us were freed from the curse very quickly. As soon as we're born, put us in the river Ganga and drown us. And then we'll come back to heaven. Ganga said, that's fine. Sure, you know, I'd love to do a favor for you guys. I know one day you'll be able to help us out. Help me out, same way. So, of course, the story went on. Ganga went down and Mahabisha was reborn as Shantanu. And Shantanu saw Ganga and he fell in love immediately. And Ganga and Shantanu were married with the promise that Ganga can do whatever she wants and the king will never stop her. And the day you stop me from doing what I deem is proper and what I want to do, that day I'm leaving you. And the king said, my wife, I love you. I trust you completely. You do whatever you want to do. I accept those terms. I am your servant. So Ganga gave birth to her first son. And the king was overjoyed. And she got up from giving birth. She took the kid down to the river and put him in the water and drowned him. And the king said, oh my God, what kind of a witch is this? And the same thing happened with the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th child. She drowned them all and freed them from the curse. And finally, she gave birth to the 8th child. And she picked up the child and was taking him down to the river and just about to submerge that child and drown the last child. And the king said, stop! I can't bear it any longer. You're killing my sons. What kind of woman are you? And she said, I'm Ganga. And you were Mahabishu. And we were cursed to come down here. And the seven children were freed from the curse very, very quickly. And the eighth one is going to be around for a long, long time. And he became Gangei, whose other name was Devadatta, who became famous as Bhishma. So we think from our human perspective that longevity is extremely desirable, whereas these seven Boshus, the Satyagarbha, they thought that from their divine perspective, it would be even more important to be freed from the curse all the more quickly. So we cling with attachment to life. We cling to life with the greatest of attachment, thinking that we will benefit by staying here a little longer. Whereas from divine perspective, this is not the greatest of all existences. This is a very efficient place to work out our karmas. But if our karmas are complete, let's go home.
Now, the Buddhists say this is the only realm that you can get liberation. Is that true, or are there easier, nicer places?
Absolutely. But you see, it's very difficult to do karma if you don't have a body. So when they say this is the best place to do your karma, it's true. It means in manifested existence. It doesn't necessarily mean in manifested existence as a human being on the earth. But in manifested existence is the only way you can fulfill your destiny. Now, there are several advantages to being manifest as a human being on the earth. Namely, we get to study the words of wisdom. We have this culture, this civilization which communicates, has the capacity to communicate great wisdom, talk about the path back to unity. So we know that exists on this planet. We don't know that exists, those forms of thought exist on every other planet or in any other manifestation.
Let's say the human mind has the power of discrimination, whereas the gods don't. They can't even achieve liberation.
Well, the gods can't achieve liberation because they're already divine. They're the forces of unity. They're the forces that bring us to liberation. They're already divine. They're immortal. They've been around and around and around.
Well, we're guaranteed lifetimes of bliss. As per our previous discussion, wouldn't it be better to just drop this body and live in bliss?
It wouldn't make any difference. We are guaranteed lifetimes filled with bliss. Let us start right now. Doesn't mean when we die, we're going to get the lifetimes. Means right now we get all the bliss we need. All we have to do is make the decision to be blissful. And once we've made that decision, then we can live in bliss. Om Sang Saraswati Namaha.
Thanks, Swami. Yeah.
Swami, to do the Navagraha Puja, is it just that?
That's the puja. We can expand it. You can make offerings. You can do 108 of each of them. You can do them at the fire. You can do 1,000 of them. But this is the basic puja with the beach mantras. So once you know the system of doing the puja, you can create your own padoti, your own system according to what your inclination is. If you want to do 10 malas of each mantra, or you want to do it in the fire.
Everybody wants love, pure love.
Everybody wants pure love, that's true. Even each of the nine planets.
Yeah. Pay attention with pure love.
Namaste.